This is lecture three of the Staying Connected, selected talks by Rudolf Steiner. Number three, the third lecture was given in Bergen, October 10th, 1913. It's called Recovering the Connection. And this is an introduction to it. Because the beings of the spiritual world cannot read, the best way to communicate spiritual truths is orally rather than through the written word. They understand and learn from thoughts that have come to life in human hearts. The modern habit of abstraction and literalism has set up a wall between those living on earth and those who live in the spiritual world, including those who have died. In earlier times, it was much easier for the love of those on earth to enter loved ones in heaven. Today we must try to re-establish those relationships and build a bridge between the living and those who have died. To do this, it is important to understand the power of love and hate. Love aids the dead, and hatred hinders and obstructs them. It places an obstacle in their path of development. The souls of the dead need nourishment just as we need food on earth. Thoughts filled with heart and love become food for those who have died. At night they draw near to our sleep and partake in our life of thinking and feeling. Often they find nothing and must turn away, hungry. Insofar as we do not live spiritually, we starve those who have died, and indeed the whole spiritual world. For the most part, of course, this nourishment comes from those souls to whom the dead were related when alive. In ancient times, the community of blood relations provided that nourishment for their ancestors. Now, the communities we create must be based on love. Souls are complex. What we see in life is only the merest surface. Many souls hunger for spiritual ideas once they are on the other side, even those who seemed averse to anything spiritual while on earth. We are books for them. They hunger for the spiritual knowledge we can gain only on the earth. We must work to make the wall between these worlds thinner. All right, again, Recovering the Connection, Bergen, October 10th, 1913. Today I want to speak aphoristically about matters related to the spiritual world. This is better and more easily expressed orally than in writing, partly because prejudices in the world make it difficult in many ways to commit to writing everything that one gladly conveys to hearts devoted to anthroposophy. But it is also difficult because spiritual truths lend themselves better to the spoken word than to writing or to print. This applies especially to the more intimate spiritual truths. When these things are written down and printed, it always goes rather against the grain, though it must be done these days. It is always difficult to allow the more intimate truths of the higher worlds to be written down and printed. The precise reason for this is that writing and printing cannot be read by the spiritual beings about whom one is speaking. Books cannot be read in the spiritual world. It is true that for a short period after death, books can still be read through remembrance, but the beings of the higher hierarchies cannot read our books. And if you ask whether these beings therefore want to learn to read, I must say that in my experience they show no desire at present to do so. They find that reading what is produced on earth would be neither necessary nor useful for them. Spiritual beings begin to read only when earthly human beings read books, when the contents of a book come to life in human thoughts. Then spiritual beings read in those thoughts. But what is written or printed is like darkness for the beings of the spiritual worlds. So when someone is committed to writing or to print, is committed to writing or to print, one has the feeling that we are communicating behind the backs of the spiritual beings. Although people of today's culture may not wholly share it, every true esotericist will experience this feeling of distaste for writing and print. As we penetrate the spiritual worlds with clairvoyant vision, we come to see that it is particularly important for knowledge of these worlds to spread more and more widely in the immediate future. There is an increasingly necessary change in human soul life, and it will depend a great deal on the spread of spiritual science. If we look back with spiritual eyes over a period of a few centuries, what we find may greatly astonish those who have no knowledge of these things. Communication between the living and the dead has become increasingly difficult. Even a relatively short time ago, it was far more active and alive. When Christians of the Middle Ages, and even Christians of more recent centuries, turned their thoughts in prayer to the dead who had been related or known to them, their prayers and feelings bore them up toward the souls of the dead with much greater power than today. It was far easier in the past for the souls of the dead to feel warmed by the breath of love flowing from those who looked up or sent their thoughts upward to them in prayer. That is, if we allow conventional culture to be our only guide. Again, the dead are cut off more drastically from the living in the present age than they were a comparatively short time ago, which makes it more difficult for them to perceive what stirs in the souls of those left behind. This is part of humanity's evolution, but that evolution must also lead to rediscovering the connection, the real communion between the living and the dead. In earlier times, the human soul could still maintain a real connection with the dead, though it was no longer fully conscious. Human beings have not been clairvoyant for a long time now. During even more ancient times, the living were able to look up to the dead with clairvoyant vision and follow the events of their lives. It was once natural for a soul to have a living relationship with the dead. Likewise, it is now possible for a soul to re-establish this communication and relationship by acquiring thoughts and ideas about the spiritual worlds. And it would be one of the practical tasks of anthroposophic living to ensure that such a bridge is built between the living and the dead. To help us truly understand one another, I want to begin by speaking about certain aspects of the mutual relationship between the living and the dead. I will start with a very simple phenomenon that will be explained according to the discoveries of spiritual research. Souls who occasionally practice a little self-contemplation will be able to observe the following, and I believe that many have done so. Let us suppose that someone has hated another person in life, or perhaps it was or is really a question of aversion or dislike. When the one who was the object of the hatred or aversion dies, the other will not feel that the same hatred or aversion can be maintained. If that hatred persists beyond the grave, sensitive souls will feel a kind of shame that it exists. This feeling, and it is present in many souls, can be observed by clairvoyance. During self-examination, one may well ask, why does this feeling of shame over some hatred or aversion arise in the soul? After all, the existence of that hatred was never acknowledged to another person. By following the one who has passed through the gate of death in the spiritual worlds, the clairvoyant investigator finds that the soul generally looks back to the earth and very clearly perceives a definite feeling of hatred in the soul of the one who is living. The one who has died, if I may speak figuratively, sees the hatred. The clairvoyant investigator can confirm the truth of this with absolute certainty, and is also able to perceive the meaning of that hatred for the one who has died. It represents an impediment to the soul who died, an obstacle to that soul's intentions for spiritual development. Such an obstacle is comparable to the earthly hindrances that block our way to an outer goal. In the spiritual world, that hatred becomes an obstacle to the good endeavors of those who have died. Consequently, we can understand why hatred dies in the souls of those who practice a little self-contemplation, even when hatred in life was justified. Hatred dies because a feeling of shame arises in the soul when the person who was hated dies. Of course, a person who is not clairvoyant does not know why, but a feeling of being observed is implanted in the very soul. One feels that the dead individual sees one's hatred and that it acts as a hindrance to that soul's good aspirations. Many feelings that are deeply rooted in the human soul are explained as we rise into the worlds of spirit and recognize the spiritual facts behind those feelings. When we do certain things on earth, we prefer not to be physically observed, and we would refrain from doing them if we knew we were witnessed. Likewise, hatred does not persist after a person's death, because we have the feeling that we are being observed by the soul who has passed over. At the same time, the love or warm-heartedness we extend to the dead eases their path by removing hindrances. What I am saying, that hatred creates hindrances in the spiritual world and love takes them away, does not have an impact on or pierce karma. Nevertheless, many things happen here on earth that we must not attribute directly to karma. If one stubs a toe on a stone, it cannot necessarily be attributed to karma, at least not to moral karma. Similarly, it is not a violation of karma when the dead feel put at ease by the love flowing toward them from earth, or when they encounter hindrances to their good endeavors. There is something else that will make an even stronger appeal for communication between the dead and the living. The souls of those who have died need nourishment in a certain sense, not of course the kind needed by human beings on earth, but spirit and soul nourishment. On the earth we must have cornfields where grain for our physical sustenance ripens. Likewise, the souls of the dead must have, quote-unquote, cornfields from which to gather the sustenance they need between death and a new birth. The clairvoyant eye sees that cornfields for the souls of the dead are in fact the souls of sleeping human beings. One who experiences this for the first time in the spirit world is not only surprised, but deeply shattered to see how the souls living between death and a new birth hurry, so to speak, toward the souls of sleeping human beings, seeking their thoughts and ideas. Such thoughts are food for the souls of the dead, nourishment they need. When we go to sleep at night, the ideas and thoughts that have passed through our consciousness in our waking hours come to life as living beings. The souls of the dead approach and share these ideas, feeling nourished as they perceive them. Clairvoyant vision can see the dead as, night after night, they make their way toward sleeping human beings left behind on earth, especially blood relations, but also friends, seeking refreshment and nourishment from the thoughts and ideas carried into sleep. And it is a shattering experience to see that they often find nothing, because in the sleep state there is a great difference between one kind of thought and another. If we are caught up all day in thoughts related to material life, with the mind directed only toward what is happening in the physical world and what may be accomplished there, and if we have no thought for the spiritual worlds before going to sleep, but in fact often take ourselves into those worlds by means quite other than such thoughts, then we have no nourishment to offer the dead. I know of towns in Europe where students induce sleepiness by drinking a lot of beer. Consequently, they carry with them thoughts that cannot live in the spiritual world. When the souls of the dead approach such souls, they find barren fields. They fare no better than our own physical body would during a famine, because our fields do not yield crops. Today especially, because materialism is so widespread, one can observe great famine among souls in the spiritual worlds. Many people consider it childish to involve themselves with thoughts of the spiritual world, but this is exactly how they deprive souls after death of needed nourishment. Before one can understand this correctly, it must be said that nourishment after death can be drawn only from the ideas and thoughts of those with whom the dead had some connection during life. Nourishment cannot be drawn from those with whom there was no connection at all. Today, when we cultivate anthroposophy, so there may again be in souls a spirituality that can nourish the dead, we are not working only for the living, or merely to provide them with some kind of theoretical satisfaction. We try to fill our hearts and souls with thoughts of the spiritual world, because we know that the dead who were connected with us on earth must draw their nourishment from these thoughts. We feel ourselves to be not only workers for living human beings, but workers too in the sense that anthroposophical activity, the spread of anthroposophical life, is also of service to the spiritual worlds. In speaking to the living for their life by day, we promote ideas that bring satisfaction in the life by night as fruitful nourishment for the souls whose karma it was to die before us. So, not only do we feel the urge to spread anthroposophy by the ordinary means of communication, but deep down within us there is the longing to cultivate anthroposophy in communities, in groups, because this is of real value. As I have said, the dead can draw nourishment only from souls that were associated with in life. We therefore try to bring souls together so that the harvest fields for the dead may become more and more extensive. Many human beings who after death find no harvest fields in their families because they are materialists find them in the souls of anthroposophists with whom they had some connection. That is the deeper reason for working together in communities, and why we are anxious that the dead should have been able before death to know anthroposophists who are still occupied on earth with spiritual things. For when these people are asleep, the dead can draw nourishment from them. In ancient times, when a certain spirituality pervaded the souls of human beings, religious communities and blood relatives were where help was sought after death. But the power of blood relationship has diminished, and must be replaced by cultivation of the spiritual life, as we endeavor to do. Anthroposophy has therefore promise, can therefore promise, that a new bridge will be built between the living and the dead, and that by it we can mean something real to the dead. And when, with clairvoyant vision today, we sometimes find human beings in the life between death and a new birth, suffering because those they have known, including their nearest and dearest, harbor only materialistic thoughts, we recognize how necessary it is for cultural life on earth to be permeated with spiritual thoughts. Suppose, for example, we find in the spiritual world a man we knew who died fairly recently and left behind certain members of his family, also known to us. The wife and children are all of them good people in the ordinary sense, with a genuine love for one another. But clairvoyant vision now reveals that the man whose wife was the very sun of his existence when he came home after heavy and arduous work cannot see into her soul because she has no spiritual thoughts in either her head or in her heart. And so he asks, "Where is my wife? What has become of her?" He can look back to the time when he was united with her on earth, but now, when he is seeking her most urgently of all, he cannot find her. This may well happen. There are many people today who believe that as far as consciousness is concerned, the dead have passed into a kind of void, who can think of the dead only with materialistic thoughts, not with any fruitful thoughts. In the life between death and rebirth, a soul may be looking towards someone still on earth who had loved him, but the love is not combined with belief in the soul's continued existence after death. In such a case, at the very moment after death, when this desire to see one who was loved on earth arises, all vision may be extinguished. The living human being cannot be found, nor can any link be established, although it is known that contact could indeed be made if spiritual thoughts were harbored in that person's soul. This is a frequent and sorrowful experience for the dead. Thus it may happen, and this may be seen by clairvoyant vision, that many human beings encounter obstacles after death in the way of their highest aims, because of the thoughts of antipathy that follow them, and they find no consolation in the living thoughts of those they were dear to on earth, now hidden from sight due to their materialism. The laws of the spiritual world, perceived in this way by clairvoyant vision, hold good unconditionally, as shown by an example it has often been possible to observe. It is instructive to see how thoughts of hatred, or at least antipathy, take effect, even if they are not conceived in full consciousness. There are school teachers of the type usually called strict, who are unable to gain the affection of their pupils. In such cases, of course, the thoughts of antipathy and hatred are formed half innocently. But when such a person dies, it can be seen how these thoughts, too, for they persist, are obstacles in the way of good endeavors in the spiritual world. After the teacher's death, it is not often that children or young people realize that hatred ought to cease, and they preserve the feeling of how the teacher tormented them. From such insights, a great deal can be learned about the mutual relationships between the living and the dead. I have been trying to lead up to an anthroposophical endeavor that can have a fundamentally good result. Reading to the dead. It has been proved in our own movement that very great service can be rendered to the souls of those who have died by reading to them about spiritual things. This can be done by directing your thoughts to the dead, which is easier to do if you picture them as you knew them in life, standing or sitting before you. In this way you can read to more than one soul at a time. You do not read aloud, but follow the ideas with alert attention, always keeping in mind the thought that the dead are standing before you. That is what is meant by reading to the dead. It is not always essential to have a book, but you must not think abstractly, and you must think each thought to the end. In this way you are able to read to the dead. Although it is more difficult, this can be carried so far that one can even read to a soul with whom the connection has been no closer than thoughts held in common, in the realm of some particular world conception, or indeed in any domain of life, if there has been some degree of personal relationship. Through the warmth of the thoughts directed to them, the dead gradually become attentive. Thus it may be of real use to read to distant associates after their death. The reading can take place at any time. I have been asked what the best time is for such reading, but it is quite independent of time. All that matters is to think the thoughts through to the end. To skim through them is not enough. The subject matter must be worked through, word by word, as if one were reciting inwardly. Then the dead read with us. And it is not correct to think that such reading can be useful only to those who have come into contact with anthroposophy during their lifetime. This is by no means necessarily so. Very recently, perhaps less than a year ago, one of our friends and his wife, too, felt a kind of uneasiness every night. As the friend's father had died a short time previously, it struck him at once that his father was wanting something and was turning to him. When this friend came to me for advice, it was found that the father, who during his lifetime would not listen to a word about anthroposophy, was feeling an urgent need after his death to know something of it. Then, when the son and his wife read to the father my lecture course on the Gospel of St. John, that soul felt deeply satisfied, as though lifted above many disharmonies that had been experienced shortly after death. This case is noteworthy, because the soul concerned was that of a preacher who had regularly presented the views of his religion to other people, but who could find satisfaction after death only by being able to share in the reading of an anthroposophical elucidation of the Gospel of St. John. It is not essential that the ones we wish to help after death should have been anthroposophists in life, although in the nature of things very special service will be rendered to anthroposophists by reading to them. Such a fact gives us a view of the human soul quite different from the one usually held. There are factors in the souls of human beings of far greater complexity than is generally believed. What takes its course consciously is actually only a small part of human soul life. In the unconscious depths of one's soul a great deal is going on of which one has at most a dim inkling. It hardly enters at all into clear waking consciousness. Moreover, the very opposite of what people believe or think in their upper consciousness may often be astir in their subconscious life. A very frequent case is that one member of a family comes to anthroposophy, and the brother or the husband or the wife become more and more hostile to it, more often scornful and rabidly opposed. Great antipathy to anthroposophy then develops in the family. Life becomes very difficult for many people because of the scorn and even anger of friends or relatives. Investigation of the hostile souls often reveals that in their subconscious depths an intense longing for anthroposophy is developing. Such souls may be longing for anthroposophy even more intensely than those who attend anthroposophical meetings avidly. But death lifts away the veils from the subconscious and balances out such things in a remarkable way. It often happens in life that people deaden themselves to what lies in the subconscious. There are people who may have an intense longing for anthroposophy, but they deaden it by raging against anthroposophy and delude themselves by repudiating it. But after death, the longing asserts itself all the more forcibly. The most ardent longing for anthroposophy often shows itself after death in the very people who have raged against it in life. Do not, therefore, refrain from reading to those who were hostile to anthroposophy while they were alive, for by this reading you may often be rendering them the greatest service imaginable. A question often raised is, how can one be sure that the soul of the dead person is able to listen? Admittedly, without clairvoyance, it is difficult to be sure of this, although if you steep yourself in thoughts of one who has died, you will in time be surprised by a feeling that the dead person is actually listening. This feeling will be absent only when the reader is inattentive and fails to notice the peculiar warmth that often arises during the reading. Such a feeling can indeed be acquired. But even if this proves impossible, it must nevertheless be said that in our attitude to the spiritual world, the following principle always applies. When we read to the dead, we help them under all circumstances, if they hear us. But even if they do not hear us, we are fulfilling our duty and may eventually succeed in enabling them to hear. In any case, we gain something by absorbing thoughts and ideas that will quite certainly be nourishment for the dead in the way indicated. Under no circumstances is anything lost. Actual experience has shown that awareness of what is being read is in fact extraordinarily widespread among the dead, and that we render a tremendous service to them by reading the spiritual wisdom that can be imparted to us today. Thus we may hope that the wall dividing the living from the dead will become thinner and thinner as anthroposophy spreads through the world, and it will be a beautiful and splendid result of anthroposophy if in a future time people come to know as actual fact, not just theory, that in reality when we pass through so-called death and are together with the dead, it is only a matter of a transformation of experience. We can actually enable the dead to share in what we ourselves experienced during physical life. A false idea of the life between death and rebirth is indicated by asking, why is it necessary to read to the dead? Do they not know through their own vision what those on earth can read to them? Do they themselves not know it far better? These questions will, of course, be asked only by one who is not in a position to know what can be experienced in the spiritual world. After all, we can live in the physical world without acquiring knowledge of it. If we are not in a position to form judgments about certain things, we have no real knowledge of the physical world. The animals live together with us in the physical world, but we do not know it as we know it. Because a soul is living in the spiritual world after death does not mean it has knowledge of that world, although it is able to behold it. The knowledge acquired through anthroposophy can be acquired only on earth. It cannot be acquired in the spiritual world. If, therefore, beings in the spiritual world are to possess knowledge, it must be learned through those who themselves acquire it on earth. It is an important secret of the spiritual worlds that the soul can be in them and behold them, but that knowledge of them must be acquired on earth. At this point, I must mention a common misconception about the spiritual worlds. When human beings are living in the spiritual world between death and a new birth, they direct their longing to our physical world, somewhat as physical human beings direct their longing to the spiritual world. Human beings between death and a new birth expect people on earth to show and radiate up to them knowledge that can be acquired only on earth. The earth has not been established without purpose in spiritual world existence. The earth has been summoned to life so that what is possible nowhere else may come into being. Knowledge of the spiritual worlds, which means more than vision, more than merely looking on, can arise only on earth. I said before that the beings of the spiritual worlds cannot read our books, and I must now add that what lives in us as anthroposophy is for the spiritual beings and also for our own souls after death, what books here on earth are for physical human beings, a source of knowledge of the world. We ourselves are living books for the dead. Try to feel the importance of these words. We must provide reading for the dead. In a certain sense, our books are more faithful and long-suffering, for they do not allow their letters to vanish into the paper while we are reading them, whereas by filling our minds with material thoughts, which are invisible to the spiritual in the spiritual worlds, we human beings often deprive the dead of the opportunity of reading. I am obliged to say this because a question often raised is whether the dead are not capable of knowing for themselves what we are able to give them. They cannot be, because anthroposophy can be grounded only on the earth, and must be carried up from there into the spiritual worlds. When we penetrate into the spiritual worlds and come to know something about the life there, we encounter conditions altogether different from those prevailing in physical life on earth. That is why it is so very difficult to describe these conditions in terms of human words and human thoughts. Any attempt to speak concretely about them often seems paradoxical. To take one example only, I can tell you of a human soul who, after death, was able, because of its special knowledge, to help me make certain discoveries in the spiritual world about the great painter Leonardo da Vinci, particularly about his famous picture, The Last Supper. When one investigates a spiritual fact in association with such a soul, that soul is able to indicate many things that ordinary clairvoyance might not otherwise have found in the Akasha Chronicle. The soul in the spiritual world is able to point things out, but only when there is some reciprocal understanding of what it is trying to convey. Something very noteworthy then comes to light. Suppose that in company with such a soul, one is investigating how Leonardo da Vinci created his famous picture, which today is hardly more than a few patches of color. In the Akasha Chronicle, one can watch Leonardo as he painted. One can see what the picture was like, although this is not easy to do. When the investigation is carried on in company with a discarnate soul who has some connection with Leonardo da Vinci and his painting, one perceives that this soul is showing one certain things, for example, the faces of Christ and of Judas as they actually were in the picture. But one perceives, too, that the soul could not reveal this unless at that moment there is understanding in the soul of the living investigator. This is a sine qua non. And only at the moment when the soul of the living investigator is receptive to what is being disclosed does the discarnate soul itself learn to understand what is otherwise merely vision. Figuratively speaking, in experiencing something together, something that can be experienced only in the way described, the discarnate soul says to the living investigator, "You have brought me to the picture, and I feel the urge to look at it with you." The investigator's desire to investigate the picture is what brings the discarnate soul to say this. Numerous experiences then arise, but a moment comes when the discarnate soul is either suddenly absent or says that it must depart. In the case I have just described, the discarnate soul said, "Up to now the soul of Leonardo da Vinci regarded with approval what was being done, but does not now desire the investigation to continue." My object in telling you this is to describe an important feature of the spiritual life. Just as in physical life we know that we are looking at this or that object, we see a rose or whatever it may be, so in the spiritual life we know that this or that being is seeing us, watching us. In the spiritual worlds we have the constant feeling that beings are looking at us, whereas in the physical world we are conscious that we are observing the world. In the spiritual world, the experience is that we ourselves are being observed, now from this side, now from that. We feel that eyes are upon us all the time, but eyes that also impel us to make decisions. With the knowledge that we are being watched by eyes favoring what we ought to do or ought not to do, we either do it or refrain. Just as here we reach out to pick a flower that delights us because we have seen it, in the spiritual world we do something because a being there views it favorably, or we refrain from the action because we cannot endure the look directed at it. This experience must become ingrained in us. In the spiritual world we feel that we ourselves are being seen, just as here in the physical world we feel that we ourselves are seeing. In a certain sense, what is active here is passive there, and what is active there is passive here. It is obvious from this that quite different concepts must be acquired to correctly understand descriptions of conditions in the spiritual world. You will therefore realize how difficult it is to describe the spiritual world in ordinary human language. You will realize, too, how essential it is that the necessary preparatory understanding be created first. That's the end of the lecture 3.